You are listening to perhaps a very controversial, a very explosive, a very animated, a very didactic episode of the Punk News Podcast. And that's episode number 358. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. Big news week this week. Big news week this week. And let me tell you, people, never go to John G for your prognostications, because we'll get into it in a moment. But I thought today's big news piece was not even going to be a blip. Ricky said, should we talk about this? I said, yeah, whatever. No one's going to care. And sure enough, a week later, the debate is still raging across the internet. And I thought it was going to be a Morrissey five-hour thing. Morrissey does something outrageous, and people yell at him, and then 4 hours later, everyone forgets. But this is still going hot. Ricky Frankel, here with us, reviews writer, interviewer, news writer, news editor. Tricky Ricky Frankel, what's happening? Are you ready for today's blazing fire debate, if you will?
I am. I'm glad we're doing it once the dust is beginning. I think the dust is beginning to settle, but I'm glad we're doing this now. And I think we'll be able to move pretty quickly from this down the road. This was one of the more stressful news weeks, I'm not going to lie, because of some questionable information we got from one of the sources. But we can go into that when we get started. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll leave them hanging, and on a happier note, the Punk News Summer Soiree, August 12th, Philomoka, there are 8 tickets left. So if you want to get one, you should get one, and by the time you hear this, it might be sold out. I don't know. 8 tickets left, and that ain't no BS. This will sell out, and there's going to be a packed house, and there with me, live in Philadelphia, will be none other than Managing Editor Adam White. Managing Editor Adam White, are you psyched? Are you stoked? Are you revved up and ready to go for the Punk News Summer Soiree, August 12th in Philadelphia, with World Inferno, French Society, Potions, Crazy the Brains, and Pushing It to the Limit?
Oh, God. This is a very conflicted emotional moment that you've caught me in, because I am pre-exhausted about our debate. But on the other hand, yes, I am excited about that. I wasn't expecting to have to change gears that quickly. It's fun. I just sat down and started making my plans to figure out how I'm actually going to attend this, since I told you I would. Google tells me there's roads, John.
Roads.
You go on them and you get where you got to go. So that's my plan.
Well, there you go. Adam White utilizing a 2,500-year-old Roman invention to make the summer soiree happen.
Don't get me started on the wheel. Holy fuck. Like, you want to talk about mind-blowing, John, the wheel.
This past weekend, my friend and I were basically yelling at people why the Romans were great for basically modernizing the concept of the road, and no one was having it. We were all yelling at people why Rome was the greatest thing ever, and no one was listening to us, Adam. No one was listening to us.
When you say yelling at people, I picture you like catcalling people from the side of, like, you're sitting at a construction site and you're yelling at people who are walking by about the Romans.
Well, actually, we bought an abandoned ice cream truck with the big announcer at the top. So we were just driving through the town yelling through the mega speaker about how awesome indoor plumbing is, and aqueducts and roads, and medical textbooks. Basically everything that Rome does and why Rome is so great. We're already off on a tangent. Let's read some mail. We got a big week this week. We'll read just a little bit of mail and then come back and get into the big topic of today, which will be the majority of today's podcast. But as always, mail-wise, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. This is from our friend Camillo, and here's what Camillo has to say. Good evening. A question which has been in the back of my mind a lot of listening to the podcast at 8. It seems to me that you all tend to really shy away from, or at least quickly depart from, the topic of politics. I'm honestly wondering why. To me, it seems that being political is inherent to punk. I'm not talking about being partisan or supporting one candidate or another, but you do not seem eager at times to disassociate the music from the You do seem eager at times to disassociate the music from the socio-political issues in which we are embroiled. I'm not asking you to be a politics podcast instead of a music podcast, but given the genre, it seems pretty baked in, though one could argue that most music has always been political. Adam seems the most willing to get into political aspects, but it is understandably reluctant to delve too much into American politics. When I saw Jeff Rosen's doc earlier this year, he had the F Trump button prominently displayed. That made sense to me because, well, punk is political. Anyway, keep up the good work, and I enjoy the show with or without politics from Camillo. And P.S., punching Nazis ain't shit compared to what our grandparents did to them. I'll throw out a quick response, and I'll let you guys respond. I feel though every time we criticize on the podcast, our go to reaction is "You're wrong." We do. You're wrong. You know, and I hate doing that, but I feel like we talk about politics a fair share. I definitely feel as though we definitely should talk about politics and are required to talk about politics because it is inherently tied to punk rock. But also, I feel as though we should only talk about politics. But I feel that I've been bashing on Trump ever since he's been running for election, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we don't talk about politics, or maybe Camillo's European, and I feel in Europe they talk about politics a little bit more than Northern Americans. I don't know. I feel like we talk about politics, but maybe we don't.
Yeah, I know. I think
we're not the 538 podcast or anything, but yeah. So I mean, like the way that I just cut off Ricky, and I apologize to you. That's how we
roll here.
But the way that I've been thinking about it lately is I feel that like Trump is such an egregious, almost inconceivable a few years ago level of disaster that the universe doesn't need me voicing that Trump is bad or Trump is doing horrible things to the world, because it seems so self-evident that that's the case, that I don't know if I have anything necessarily to add to that. And partly what I'm coming to it when I'm looking at the American politics, I don't think I'm necessarily shy to talk about American politics being a Canadian, but what I am in is I am in this weird, I feel like I'm desperately struggling around to find some sort of counter narrative to go latch onto right now that has, I guess, more nuanced, or maybe like more of a sense that I can do something about it. So the Trump thing, like you guys are fucked. And there's a lot of, there's not a whole heck of a lot that I think I can add that's very interesting that anyone else hasn't already said a million times. And I'm one of these people that's like, the whole, the Trump presidency has completely poisoned my ability to be productive, because I just kind of will hang around online for several hours in a given day and just like look at various like politics subreddits waiting for, I don't know, the shoe to drop. And there's like four things a day where it's like, holy fuck, this is it. This is the shoe dropping. And then it's just, everyone's like, yeah. So he ran over a school kid. Who cares? And then they,
I feel like, I have nothing to interrupt you, but I feel like he does all these outrageous things. They were like, can you believe the outrageous thing he did? And then nothing happens. You know
like,
what I mean?
Like, yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like anything, like any other politician at any point in history would have done like one of the things that he does in a given week, and it would have been the end of their career. So there's, it's so unbelievable to me that I can't like rightly sit here and be like, holy fuck, do you know what Trump did? Because like, I'm sure by the time the podcast goes up, like he'll do like seven other things that are worse. So for me, what I find that I'm doing is like personally, the thing that I've sort of been latching onto and reading more about and trying to understand more about the conflicts and the struggles in right now. And this is, I don't know how relevant this is to anyone, but like Indigenous issues up here in Canada, like what's going on reserves and things of like, you know, like water quality and Indigenous representation and all this stuff. Like that is very, I don't know, like it's being talked about a lot in the Canadian media, at least more than it was. And it feels like something tangible. Like it feels like, okay, here's a real serious problem where people are suffering. And like we as the collective people of society could be doing more about this. And to a degree, like, it feels like, okay, like, here's something that is a big problem that we can do something about. Like, Trump, I don't know what the fuck to do about Trump, like, unless we really open up some sort of vortex to the negative zone and, like, suck him up. Like, I don't know what to do. So, for me, a lot of the stuff that comes up, I think, day to day that might be something we talk about here is, yeah, I don't even know where to go about it these days. I'm just, like, deer in the headlights with how crazy it is.
Maybe Sliders can help us out.
Like Sliders, the TV show from the 90s?
Right, right.
No, because, like, whenever they would slide somewhere, it would end up being like Nazi America, right? So you don't want to go slide from wherever you guys are to like more Nazi America. Like, it's going to be way worse.
Adam, what if we're in one of the bad worlds in Sliders? Ricky, ooh, you remember Sliders?
I don't, actually.
Sliders was sort of like, I guess, like Quantum Leap if you were born in like the early 80s, I guess. Like, it was like a TV show in the 90s that was like, was it post X-Files?
I think it was actually around the same time or slightly before, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it was dumb, but if you were of a certain age, you remember it. There's like people like went through these little portals or something into alternate universes every episode. So every episode was like them in like some sort of alternate Earth where something was slightly fucked up in one way or another. And more often than not, it'd be like, uh-oh, we're in the America where the Nazis won. But, you know.
Adam, you have your mind blown. Jerry O'Connell was only 21 during the filming of Sliders.
And he has had an illustrious career since.
Hey, listen, man. Jerry O'Connell.
Hey, Kangaroo Jack was a good movie.
Jerry O'Connell's like a nice guy, honestly. I've seen some interviews with him. And he knows he's Jerry O'Connell, and so he's just chill. You know what I mean? I got nothing but love for Jerry O'Connell. Ricky, where do you spend Jerry O'Connell?
I don't. I was joking about Kangaroo Jack.
Is Jerry O'Connell and Brendan Fraser the same person?
No, Jerry O'Connell is John Stamos, like the poor man's John Stamos.
Oh, God.
I feel like there's like this whole group of actors that at one point had careers that we don't hear about anymore, and maybe they all like left the planet together on the same ship.
Well, Jerry O'Connell was recently in Justice League Dark. That's pretty good. And Veronica Mars.
Oh, God, Ricky, why don't you talk about politics? Fuck you.
Why don't
you talk? Yeah, Camille's like, how come you guys never talk about politics? And I'm like, man, remember Sliders?
Well, I think we don't talk about it. I mean, we talk about it, but at the same time, definitely in the last, you know, since the election, things have just been always politics. There's just been, and I don't know how much more we could add to the discussion, especially since we're weekly and not, you know, CNN or like
minutely,
a, you know, or like a, you know, a cable news network that's 24/7.
Well, so, I mean, here's a great example, and I'm going to cut you off, Ricky, because I'm a jerk. But here's a great example of what Ricky's just saying. So 538, the website, Nate Silver's thing, it does have a politics podcast that is good, and you should listen to it. But whenever something crazy happens, they, instead of releasing their weekly podcast, will do an emergency podcast. They'll get everybody in the room and record for like 20, 30 minutes or whatever they need just to cover the crazy shit that's happened. And over the past month, there's been like 7 emergency podcasts. Well, like, they can't keep on their schedule because crazy things keep happening.
Yeah, so I mean, unless Adam, you have the energy and time to do that, I don't see us doing that anytime soon. You know, I think we never really shy away from the politics when it's very, you know, if it has to do with the art, like, you know, when we talked about a Green Day music video a while back or whatever. I mean, I just don't think. Also, it won't be when once this comes out, it won't. It probably won't, you guys are right. It probably won't be that current. I think also, I don't have a huge issue with us being sort of a break from politics since it's so, so heated right now. And just kind of being that non-political entertainment, even though I'm happy to go into politics when the story calls for it. I don't think we need to be 538. Let's leave that to the pros all the time. But when it's necessary, we'll do it. When it's not, we don't need. I don't think that we need to go around making things political. We're a music podcast. We're critics of art. We're not.
I mean, the one thing that we're not,
Wolf Blitzer.
I don't think we're trying to shy away from offending anyone.
Right.
I mean, no. if you are a person that supports and enables Donald Trump, like, fuck you and go to hell. You're hurting people. So like, I don't think it is bad that we're not trying to not say those things, but like, you know, you people, you should go fuck yourselves. You don't need us to tell you that.
I kind of disagree with both Adam and Ricky in that they both seem to be like, we're a music podcast, and if politics comes up, we'll talk about it. But I do think politics is part of punk, and I do think it's our duty to talk about it at least to a degree. And I kind of feel like we do, but maybe we should talk less. So listen, write into us, podcast@punknews.org. Do you want more politics, less politics? Do you want punk news to become PNN? And all we do is talk about breaking news about what's happening in politics, podcast@punknews.org. Let's play a song and come back and talk about today's big issue. Who's going to play a tune?
I will, but like, could you imagine us having to seg from like a real story into something else? So it's like, so you know, oh, Donald Trump just ate a baby. Here's the new video from Simple Plan. Like that just seems like a weird break from things that matter to things that don't.
Isn't that what we do, Adam? Pivot wildly from things that do matter to things that don't matter.
No, not at all. And I do not want to imply to anyone that we would ever talk about a Simple Plan video. So don't, I just want to walk that back before I stick my foot in my mouth or anything. So, Toronto is a place that is, somewhat horrible, but there's amazing bands that come from there. Plasma Lab is one that this year has a pretty incredible record that came out. It's one of the better punk rock records this year. It is called Love/Life. It came out on Bruised Tongue this past spring. So this is a song from Plasma Lab. They're like a sludgy three-piece noisy punk band. And the song is called Flippy Man. So song's called Flippy Man. It's by Plasma Lab out of Toronto. And you should go check out their record Love Life because it's great. Here you go. Back. Oh man.
Big news week this week.
Yeah, all right. So yeah. Let's set down some ground rules before we start here. How are we going to approach this?
I'm going to tell the news and then rant and then you guys can react.
So I guess to anyone that doesn't know what we're going to talk about, there's a couple sides to this story. There's a couple statements that are out there. I don't know which of the statements you're going to start with. You can start with Kevin Lyman's.
I think I'm gonna tell this chronologically, honestly.
We'll sort of lay out what happened, and then I mean, part of the story from a discussion standpoint at this stage, like a week after it happened, is everybody in the punk scene that has a name to themselves that people would recognize has weighed in on this in some way or another. And yeah. I mean, as we were sitting here waiting for the call to start, I found like two or three more of them just by popping onto like Google News, and like, oh, it's like everybody has an opinion on this, and usually they're different from each other. So, yeah, John, take it away.
John, just real quick, I might need to jump in just real quick as when you get to a certain part, just to explain something, because something was not 100% honest.
I think getting hung up on something, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Unless it's something else. Let's get into it. So anyway, the Dickies were on Warped Tour. They were only on for a couple of shows. And on June 26th, it all went down. What happened was a person was standing with a poster that said, our teenage girls don't need to be subjected to derogatory jokes by a disgusting old man. And then that person threw things at the lead singer of the Dickies, Leonard Phillips. And so what happened is he kind of freaked out and he called the girl, he called her the C word, he called her fat, and he called her a whole bunch of nasty stuff. Basically, he yelled at her and he yelled what you would stereotypically yell at a woman to make her feel bad. He called her the C word and some other stuff. You know what he said. So anyways, he freaked out. And then after that show, the Dickies were no longer on the tour and people didn't know exactly why. The real answer was because that was their last date with the show. And so Leonard Phillips then put a post up on his Facebook. This is the context. While doing our show, a handful of people took it upon themselves to express their ire with my routine. A routine that includes apish antics, a penis puppet, and often ends with me saying, you're a great-looking bunch of kids. We'd love to go down on each and every one of you, but we just don't have the time. Apparently, this group thought I meant it literally as they were holding a sign on the side of the stage, which was then thrown at me that read, our teenage girls don't need to be subject to derogatory jokes by discussing old man. Punk isn't predatory. I finally let my anger get the better of me. I let her know what I thought of her ageist, nasty, Leonard-hating behavior. I used very rude language. And so then Kevin Lyman posted a statement, and he put, it was a very unfortunate incident, and the tour does not condone this at all. And I thought this thing was just going to blow over. Somebody yelled something, somebody at a punk show. I mean, that's not news at all, is it? But the fire got hotter, and so then Kevin Lyman was forced to issue an official statement, and here's what he said. Dear music community, I thought it was time to put the facts out there since I've watched false information floating around. A video has been circulating of a confrontation between Leonard from the Dickies and a fan. Fact, it was not a fan, but a member of a touring party at Warped Tour. The member of the touring party was standing next to the PA with a sign protesting some of the things they found offensive about the band's jokes and props on the stage. During one of the last songs, they went towards the barricade and directed the sign at the band. After a verbal barrage from Leonard, the member of the touring party threw the sign at Leonard and left the area. I do not condone verbal or physical violence whatsoever. The Dickies, the last day of the tour was Sunday, which had always been scheduled. These are the facts of what took place, and this is why I ask anyone who has an issue with anyone else on the tour to come sit under my tent with me and express their views diplomatically. On this year's tour, we have had many people who may not agree with each other, but as humans, we should be able to express our point of view in a civil manner. If we have any hope to progress as a society, communication will be key in moving forward. Regards from Kevin Lyman. So, Ricky, did we address the thing that you were concerned about?
Not really. No.
What were we concerned about?
Just real briefly. So, the one thing I wanted to address was Kevin Lyman's initial tweet to the person that posted the video. He said it was very unfortunate. It was a very unfortunate incident. The tour does not condone this at all. They will no longer be on the tour. That could mean two very different things.
Oh, indeed.
And the issue was, and we were not the only one, and I was not the only one that got this wrong initially. There were other publications that also got this wrong because of the vagueness of what he said. He says, they will no longer be on the tour. It could mean they got kicked off. This is what it sounds like. And then also, John, and you mentioned this, the Dickies only played, this happened on the Dickies' last show of the Warped Tour. So, that was not made apparent at all. So, unless you went to the Warped Tour website, which I did later, and I found out that was the last day. So, I don't understand. Is this a bad time to plug my interview with Kevin Lyman before this happened?
We'll get to that. Ricky did a good interview with Kevin Lyman.
No, I'm not like attacking him, but like that was not a good way to handle it to begin with. That's what I wanted to point out.
I think he's between a rock and a hard place because Kevin Lyman is an old punk guy, you know, and also he's probably friends with a Dickie, so he doesn't want to sell his pals out, but he can't be like, oh, we support the Dickies 100% just because there's large factions on either side of this. I was really surprised about how big this issue was, and I was also surprised about how it kept going. And also, a lot of people that I thought would take opinion A took opinion B, and a lot of people that I thought would take opinion B took opinion A.
I think certain people don't think there's only one opinion here.
Fair enough. But here's my perspective: is are the Dickies predatory? Are the Dickies predatory? Are they dangerous? No, it's the Dickies. They're a silly, goofy, dumb punk group. And the only reason anyone would be subjected to them if they chose to be there. If you choose to go into the Dickies space, then you are choosing to be, I guess, in the presence of what they're saying. In this case of the protester versus the Dickies, who wins? The Dickies win by default, and here's why. The Dickies didn't physically attack anybody. They verbally attacked a person, maybe nastily, but they're, you know, that's freedom of speech. The people attacked the Dickies physically by starting violence by throwing something at the Dickies. Therefore, the Dickies win by default because, to me, speech without violence beats violence every single day of the week. And the people that are saying the Dickies are predatory, that the Dickies are creating unsafe spaces, the idea behind their position generally is that when you use certain language, that you create a unsafe space that might result in physical harm to people. I don't agree with that concept, but that's the argument. However, that person or those people then chose to escalate the situation by attacking someone physically. So it just goes to show that they're hypocrites and that they're not trying to fight violence. What they're trying to do is have everyone think and have everyone express themselves in the exact way that they choose to express themselves. And what they're saying by attacking the Dickies, And I saw people defending, you know, people attacking the Dickies and whatnot, physically that is that they're saying, if you don't agree with us, then we will try to censor you. We will try to wipe out what you're saying and we will attack you physically. That's the definition of fascism, using physical force of a certain group of people to silence and cause harm to another group of people that disagree ideologically with what you're saying. That's fascism. So you can say, oh, no, we care about people and we want to respect people's views and make everyone everywhere a safe space. But that's not what you want. What you want is to force everyone to think like you, to speak like you. And if you don't agree with them, then you will be physically attacked and, you know, banished and silenced. That's fascism. That's what they want. And if that's what they want, then they should at least say that and not doing it under some guise that we want safe spaces, because that's not what they want. What they want is to everyone to agree with them and to force the Dickies to agree with them and their concept. A lot of people wrote some things about Shauna Potter of War and Women wrote something. Ben Weasel of all people wrote something. Propaganda was speaking with Ben Weasel, and I'll just address this briefly. What we're seeing is what's central to the American ideology is that you can express yourself however you want, well, not however you want, but nearly however you want, so long as what you're expressing is not illegal, so long as you only express it and do not cause physical harm to people. And we used to have the concept in the United States that I don't agree with what you say, but I respect your right to say it. In the past 10 years, somewhere we've lost that, and now we're at the point where if I don't agree with what you're saying, if we don't agree with what you're saying, then we will do everything we can to silence you, to wipe you out, and even to attack you, which is what's happening here. And I think the people doing that don't realize how foolish, how short-sighted, and how scary that is. And I think it's because maybe those people have had it too good. Those people are generally too young to remember the 70s, the 80s, when Jello Biafra was literally put on trial for obscenity, when Lenny Bruce was literally threatened with jail time with obscenity, when the PMRC tried to censure Frank Zappa and even John Denver. And I find it so outrageous that the punk community, which is supposed to be independent thinking, throwing off the shackles of oppression, is becoming the tool of oppression merely because, I guess, the government or other forces are no longer trying to silence what people are trying to say as much. I think it's bizarre, honestly. I think it's crazy. And I think it's so short-sighted and so foolish. And I don't know why we're into this position. And honestly, it makes me sick to my stomach. And it makes me really realize how dumb, stupid, weak, and cowardly the human race is. Even when we throw off all the shackles of, you know, conceptual oppression, if you will, even after we beat censorship laws, even after we beat the PMRC, even after we beat the church, we beat them all. Now you can say what you want. You can say F this, you can say F that. You can say, I like having sex with so-and-so. You can show that on video. And I approve of all that because I believe in free speech. We've got that. And now that we've got that, the punk rockers are becoming the PMRC and saying, you can't say that here because we disagree with it and we will silence you. I find that so absurd, so bizarre, and it makes me sick to my stomach. I think they don't realize how the people before them fought so hard for freedom of expression. If they don't like what the Dickies are saying, they're more than welcome to protest. They're more than welcome to throw their own cons. Say, we think the Dickies are jerks and we think they're nasty. But they're not doing that. What they're trying to do is physically attack the Dickies and bands like them, physically attack people they disagree with, and also try to silence and destroy the Dickies and bands like the Dickies' right to speak. And I think it's so short-sighted because they don't realize that who gets to be the arbiter of what is proper and what is not proper. And once you have a collection of group that does decide what is proper and what's not proper, then the battle's already lost. And you are in the throes of fascism or fascist ideology controlling people's way of communicating. And I hope people realize what's going on, but I don't see it going that way. And in fact, I'm seeing it getting much worse, and I'm scared.
Adam, you go ahead.
I gotta follow the John. Okay, I'm gonna come at this from a different angle. Where so John went macro. So you're looking at this from the societal level. I'm gonna look at this from the micro level and specifically of the incident here, and not try to. I'll get into it at the end, but I won't try to extrapolate too much out of this yet. And so I mean the only thing, John, out of your opinion there that I would question, and I don't think it invalidates what you were saying, but I think it bears, us clarifying here is, and I haven't actually seen if there is any like video or anything of this that happened, but you said physically attack a bunch of times. Were they physically attacked? Like I knew that like she threw her sign, but like, I don't know to what degree we're talking about a sign here. Like, was it like a Bristol board sign that she just tossed toward the stage, or was it like a placard?
No, it's like a big, you know, a big white poster board. You know what I mean? But listen, that's how a riot starts. You know what I mean?
All right, I just wanted. All right, so that doesn't really matter. So there's, I don't know. I look at this whole thing and I see that, and you touched on this. There was a totally valid and healthy debate that could have been had by all sides here that would have probably been illuminating to some people. And everyone sort of acted dumb in their own way. And it's just made the whole thing worse. And I was joking before the show about how exhausted I've been just thinking about debating this. And it's not so much that I don't want to talk about it. It's because I've read so many hot takes. Someone just pulled up on their motorcycle, I guess. I've read so many hot takes.
Oh, there's a helicopter. There's a helicopter flying by. Sorry.
See, they're already watching us, boys. They're already watching us.
The black helicopters are after Ricky. All right. So everyone in this acted in the worst way that I think that they could have. And it's made it easy for everyone to have really cheap debate about this, when there is a much more interesting and healthy debate. And I think the much more interesting and healthy debate that people could be having is the debate over this intersection between political correctness and identity politics and the concept of privilege. And then you take that and you contrast that with these traditional sort of punk rock notions of, you know, of freedom and of being controversial and all that. And like, there's a totally interesting debate that probably should be happening there. And I'm not even going to pick a side in that debate, but that could be happening. But everyone here in their own way acted dumb one or two times. And that has made it all, like, it's worse for all of us. So, I mean, on the one hand, you have like the protest itself. So they went and they made a sign and they were, you know, protesting from the side of the stage, and you know, and the sign got thrown on stage. So, all right. I mean, looking at that, there are many ways in which you can go and you can confront an artist, especially an artist that's on a big tour like that, that's getting press today, that doesn't involve not only like having a placard, but, you know, having something that you're going to physically throw at them or physically confront them with. Like, there's a way to have that debate that I think that could have been very interesting. What Shauna from War of Women did with her article is, in my mind, like the way to go about that is better, because you know, it's allowing people the chance to go and to read and consider what they're saying, as opposed to it being reduced to just an act of disobedience, which is what I guess the throwing of the sign was. So there's that aspect where it was like the way that the protest against the Dickies was voiced cheapened the debate that they could have had about it. Like, you could have made a whole bunch of noise about this and didn't bring that aspect into it at all. So there was never a question. It would never have come up that you were getting in their face or confronting them or doing anything that was going to be provocative in that way. So there's that. There's, of course, the way that the guy from the Dickies responded to it, which was really fucking dumb, and you know, made everything worse. Because not only did he respond, you know, negatively to the protester there, but he responded negatively to the protester using like the very words that are the worst in that realm. Like, he went and responded with like the most demeaning, insulting, you know, set of language that he could, which in a lot of people's minds completely validates what the protester was saying. So they're saying that, oh, well, the Dickies are disrespecting women. And then his response to this is to horribly disrespect women for real. Even if what he was, you could have made the argument that what he was doing sort of prior to responding was art, he responded by actually being insulting. So like that was dumb. And you would have hoped that for a band like this, that is a veteran band that has been, you know, that has been in the shit for years, that has had way worse than signs thrown at them over their career, would have had a slightly more, I don't know, tactful or clever way to respond to that than just, you know, getting really angry and, you know, calling someone a cunt. Like, that was not the most effective way of doing that at all. And then the part of this too that it all gets wrapped up in is that, like the Dickies have a dumb act. Like, their shtick is dumb. It's always been kind of dumb and juvenile. And the interesting debate that has actually been going on about the way that, say, like a lot of these younger bands on Warped Tour, especially bands that I guess stereotypically have been from like the emo, whatever that means, world. You know, the things that they write about women, the ways that they interact with women, you know, the stuff that comes across lyrically and all that. A lot of that stuff is super problematic, but it's usually way more problematic than I think what the Dickies are going to be singing about, because the Dickies are, I guess, like, true to their name, up there singing stupid songs about penises and things like that, that are, when you really look at them, like, meant to be offensive. Like, it's really clear looking at the Dickies whole career that, like, that their art is to be this dumb in your face offensive band, like, not necessarily unlike, say, like your Guars and your Dwarves and things like that of the world, right?
However, I would counter, Adam, that both Guar and Dwarves come at a higher level of intelligence with regards to these topics.
Exactly. And that sort of gets into the thing that I've been thinking about for the past week, and that I wanted to try to voice here. And I think that this is one of these things that this, to me, it works against the Dickies a little bit here, but it, I think, is an interesting thing to consider, is that there is a big difference between being this kind of band and being offensive versus being insulting. And if you're being offensive, you're trying to challenge preconceived notions about like what you can and can't do on stage and what you can and can't say. You're doing it really for the sake of the art and for the sake of the message and for the sake of trying to communicate. If you're being insulting, you're trying to hurt someone, right? You're trying to cut. So if you look at your Guars, and I can't believe I'm the one talking about Guar a bunch in this episode, but I mean, if you look at your Guars of the world, what they're doing is offensive, right? They're on stage and there's blood and body parts and, you know, grotesque.
Bin Laden.
Yeah. Right. And all kinds of stuff happening there. But the idea there is that it's offensive. They're trying to challenge, you know, your notion of what you could see going on stage. And to a degree, a lot of bands that were in that like really sarcastic, early poppy punk rock thing were doing that kind of thing. And I mean, the Dickies have songs that are in that realm, like Screeching Weasel has songs that are in that realm, where they're saying something that is trying to be provocative, right? And that's on the offensive end of it. But then the insulting end of it is where you're actually saying something like with the intent to hurt, with the intent to, you know, to voice some sort of vicious displeasure against someone. And that, in my mind, is like, A, that's what a lot of those kind of the... I don't want to keep talking about this band because I don't, but like was that not what like a lot of this like Ronnie Radke Falling in Reverse kind of stuff was controversial for a while? I mean, I might be conflating them with some other band.
I would actually disagree. I would disagree that Ronnie Radke is exploitative and they're feeding off what a certain segment of people want, whereas bands like The Mentors and Gigi Allen were insulting, if you will.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I didn't want to bring that band in because I wasn't quite sure if I was right on that. So I'll leave them out. But in any case, like you can be offensive versus you can be insulting. So the Dickies, before this incident, if you had to be like how would you describe the Dickies, I'd be like the Dickies are on the offensive end of things. Like they're dumb, they're not doing it at a very high level of sophistication, but they're on the offensive end, they're not on the insulting end. But as soon as their singer responded in the way that he did, it kind of like took that off the table and he walked right into the insulting end of it. And the protest that they were getting, to me, is much more valid of a protest if you're protesting against someone that's being insulting as opposed to someone that's being offensive. So I feel it's like both parties muddied the whole fucking thing up by doing that. And now it's just become this giant proxy debate for all of these, like, I don't even want to say Trump era, but for all of these like grievances that people have over, everything we've joked about in the show before, over microaggressions, over safe spaces, this whole, all those debates that have been going on college campus about where the limit of speech is when you're trying to not, you know, harm anyone by what your speech is, all that kind of stuff, trigger warnings, right? It's become a proxy for all like the angst over those issues have been lumped into this. But I don't even feel like taking a side in it because, like, on the one hand, like, if this incident didn't happen, if I came at this from looking at, say, let's say the first I walked into this issue was, say, Shauna from War on Women went and wrote an editorial for Vice about how the stuff that the Dickies and some of these older punk bands are doing on stage is problematic and harmful because of this, that, and the other. I'd probably be more inclined to agree with her than not. But I mean, I don't want to agree with anyone in this because, you know, the Dickies didn't handle their confrontation with any amount of like grace or cleverness. Like they got insulting, and the protester wasn't, you know, bringing their issue to the table in a way that was necessarily going to rally my support because of the way that worked out. And like a pox on all your houses. That's where I'm going.
So Adam going for the nihilist destruction of humanity angle, which he always seems to fall back to. Insightful, Adam. Insightful.
So to answer your question, John, about whether this has been going on for 10 years, I'd actually argue it's been going on for probably closer to 40, and it's been coming from the college campuses. So I have questions. I happen to agree more with John on this one. But and by the way, even today's the 5th, and the Dickies actually posted another response about how he quote feels terrible about the Warped Tour incident, and you can read that all on their Facebook page. So he I think he actually does come to terms with the notion that he did not handle it probably the best way he could. What was the tour thinking when they decided to team up with something called Safer Scenes, which I believe is associated with War on Women and where the protester came from? What were they thinking about having a band like the Dickies, who are quote unquote now, I guess, unsafe, go and tour the same time that this, you know, War on Women are on there and other bands of this ilk, and share a stage with them, share tents? I don't understand why this is a good idea to begin with.
I'll tell you why.
It should be a good idea. Like,
right, right, right.
Like, well, those two things should be able to coexist. Because, like, I would look at it and say that, like the safe spaces thing, you know, they're trying to combat these environments for women at punk shows that are a lot of the times really horrible. They're trying to provide, you know, an opportunity to have that dialogue about, I mean, I don't want to say safe spaces derogatorily because we've been saying it that way a little bit, they're trying to help make the scene better for like this half of the population that we want to be participating in the scene. And like that's a totally admirable thing. And I don't see that as being contrary to having an old offensive punk band like the Dickies playing a tour. Well, like those two things should conflict.
Well, that's what happened literally negates what you just said. They clearly can't. And,
I'll tell you why, Ricky, because Kevin Lyman overestimated the intelligence of his audience. Kevin Lyman,
that's possible too.
This Warped Tour was an important Warped Tour because the cliche of Warped Tour is always a bunch of, you know, cheesy bands that real punk rockers don't care about. So this year, Kevin Lyman said, listen, let's bring everybody to the party. Let's bring the old punk rockers. Let's bring the new political punk rockers like Warren Women. And we'll have our usual cheesy bands that we've had for the past 10 years. And he says, it'll be a big party. We'll have all these different kinds of views. The problem is we have one group at least saying, oh, well, we don't want any other views on this. So we'll try to wipe them out. So Kevin Lyman overestimated the intelligence of the Warped Tour audience, or really some groups on the Warped Tour.
Right. So clearly it doesn't work. And,
well, he tried.
You know? They tried, but it doesn't work. As of right now, I'm not I've noticed that the safer scenes, regardless of what their stated objectives are, they've made a lot of money. They've raised a lot of money from this controversy. I don't fully trust them. I don't know who made them the arbiters of what a safe scene is. I don't know why they are the morally superior in the punk scene. So as of right now, I do not trust them. And to try and to do this and to protest a band like the Dickies, but not any other of the quote unquote offensive bands, I find questionable best.
It reads like a hit, doesn't it?
It really does, I think. And also, one thing I've learned about being in the punk media and interacting with musicians behind the scenes when they're not on stage is we don't know what happened. Is fans don't know what happened behind the scenes. We don't know if there was a confrontation between War on Women, this Safer Scenes, and the Dickies to begin with. So because he came on hot on that protester, like to me, almost as if they had talked behind closed doors about it. I saw the Dickies at Punk Rock Bowling. It was dumb. It was fun. Whatever. No one got insulted. You know, he brought up the dick puppet. It was whatever. I didn't particularly find it amazing, but you know, it was fine. And I'd seen the Dickies before. I believe with the Dwarves.
Ricky, is it a puppet that he puts on his dick or a puppet that looks like a dick?
No, it's a puppet that has like eyes on a dick, and it's like on his arm and stuff like that.
That's not that funny.
So, and then the other thing is, why aren't, you know, you talk about like Falling in Reverse being on the tour at times, you know, Gwar. Why aren't these bands and other bands being protested? Why is it just the Dickies? I don't understand this. And the macro thing that I wanted to bring up that Adam touched upon a little bit is why what this did, and I think this was good, because I'd been suspecting this, and I think John's been suspecting this a little bit too. Why, not why, but this exposed something severe that is going on in the punk scene, and it is the young punks that are on the War on Women side, quote unquote, and then you have the old punkers that, you know, just want to be offensive and just like it was in the 80s. And what it's done is it's exposed a very deep divide within the scene, as you see in the Facebook comments, which, believe it or not, are more cancerous on this story than on the website's comments. But nonetheless, they are still they're very polarized. And I think it's extremely interesting to see that there is such a huge disagreement here. I don't know what it's going to do. But yeah, I have a lot of questions about this. I think the Dickies may have, I can't prove this. I think the Dickies may have been targeted. That's being conspiratorial, obviously. I don't have proof of that. But as of right now,
Ricky Franklin, our very own Alex Jones.
The Dickies have a sex farm on Mars. That video was clearly taken out of context. We don't even see the poster being thrown at him, I don't think. I'm not sold on this safer scenes thing at all.
So, I mean, but here's the problem there is I think you're drawing too much of like a dichotomy between things that you don't need to draw a dichotomy between. And this is why this whole issue is making me crazy. So,
right.
I mean, so like, I don't think, and I don't know if it's necessarily right to equate like one side of this being war on women and one, the Dickies. Like,
well, the thing is the reason why I bring that up is because from what I think was in Shauna's article, it was actually the person protesting was actually associated with the band. And also, if you look at the Safer Scenes Twitter account, they actually say that they're affiliated with War on Women.
Well, yeah, because War on Women is a big booster of that thing. But I mean, again, it's not necessarily like them versus the Dickies. I don't think
okay,
we should
fine.
Phrase
so,
it
so
that way.
Safe, fine. Safer Scenes versus them.
Sure. But, okay, if you want to go that way.
That's what I meant.
In any case with it, like, I don't think any of those divides necessarily need to exist like that. Like, War on Women toured with Flag, so they were playing with a whole bunch of old ass punk rock people, and there was no word of contention that came out of that. So,
but Flag doesn't try to be offensive in the way the Dickies do.
Well, sure, but you can't make the old versus young argument. And
no, I was talking about in terms of just the, not necessarily the artist, but I'm just talking about the audience. There's a deep divide within the audience that I thought was very interesting.
So, but to go just like a little bit further than that, regardless, like in my mind, and this is where, like, I don't know, like I wish people would be more professional about things. And I don't buy the argument that like, oh, it's punk rock, so it's wild and crazy all the time. And I'm throwing this at the Dickies here, where I don't really care what happened behind the scenes or if there was behind the scenes drama. Someone could have, for the whole week running up to that show, been pissing in the Dickies cornflakes just to fuck with them, right? But whatever. You're on stage. You're in front of people. Someone has thrown a sign at you. Oh, God, right? You know that you're being, you know, it's the modern age. You're being recorded, right? You're on film. People are going to be talking about whatever you do all over the world. You don't need to respond with this like vicious tirade in the way that he did.
Oh, he admits that.
Yeah, but hindsight's 2020.
Sure, he's admitting it now. He's admitting it now when he's all of a sudden like public enemy number one. Like, you have to step out and admit that now, right? But at the time, he was not without control of his, you know, of his faculties. Like,
I agree with that.
He's an adult. I don't buy anyone's argument ever that like, oh, the passion of the moment overtook me, so I had to yell
I agree, Adam.
I definitely buy that. You're up there. The sun's beating down on you. You know, you got this person nagging at you your whole show. You're trying to put on a good show. You snap.
Even if he snapped,
he's still responsible for what he says.
I don't know if what he said was really that bad. Was it in poor taste? Yes. Should he have done it? No. Is it something that shows that he's a horrible person? No. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not saying I'm condemning him to hell or that it proves that he's a horrible person or anything like that. But if there was anything that was leading up to this point, like if this was all, you know, the tip of some sort of iceberg that was these two forces of political correctness and these forces of punk rock freedom were just battling behind the scenes, and this is just where it sort of like broke into the public. If that was the case, then why would you do and say the one thing that would make it colossally worse, like heat of the moment or otherwise?
And that's something I also wanted to mention. I mean, what do you, I mean, the best thing he probably could have done is just ignored it. And this wouldn't be a thing.
I mean, if he just walked away, but then again, I'm saying like you're on stage, you're the frontman of a band, you have the communications power there. You could have made a colossal mockery of the whole thing.
He could have totally turned it around on them.
But that's hindsight. You guys are sitting at your home in an air conditioned place, no stress at all, saying, in this situation, here's what I would have done. It's not the same when you're up there on the stage, there's people clapping, yelling, it's hot, the sun's beating down on you, you're tired. tired. You've been out there for 12 hours. You know, that's not the same situation.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But that's why I think that this whole thing, this whole issue is just colossally muddled. Like, it's there's a good, interesting debate that I think should be had. I don't want to write off the safer space stuff. Like, I've never interacted with it one way or another, but like, I understand the general goals of the thing, and I'm never going to come out and say that, like, you know, oh, well, because of this dumb incident where the Dickies guy's getting raked around on the internet, we got to back off trying to make shows better for women, for like half of the people on the planet. Right. Like, that seems like a crazy thing to go down. Like, I'm not going down there. Right. So this individual movement or this individual organization that's trying to go for those goals, it, sure, like anything, it has its problems, but whatever. Right. Like, that, I don't want to go like, whoo, they came for the Dickies. I guess we gotta back off all of this, like, you know, trying to make stuff better for women thing. Like, that seems like a bridge too far.
I have another question too. I mean, if this person was so proud to be on the front lines of creating a safer scene, why aren't they proud enough to be talking about it now? Why aren't they on Twitter? Why don't we know who this person is?
Well, listen, I think we can all agree that the worst part of this is the insufferable people that use this as not a way to get closer to a truth, but really just to support themselves and say, yeah, I'm special because I believe A, B, and C.
That's the
Ricky, play a song. Let's blow this out and let's come back with some other news.
All right. I had one other thing to say, but I'm probably gonna get enough shit now. The Svetlana's put out a record called This Is Moscow, Not LA, through Rad Girlfriend Records last month. It's cool. It's Svetlana's thrashy, angry, mean, probably too offensive for Warped Tour. This song, and I've been listening to it a lot. It's a good record. This song is called Negative Approach by Svetlana's. Here it is.
We are back. That was Svetlana's doing Negative Approach. I don't know if that's got a relation to the band or not. We've already been talking almost an hour, so we got a little bit we're going to blast through, and we'll go through it pretty quickly. This is an interesting story. The Fyre Festival co-founder has been arrested for wire fraud. As you guys might remember, about a couple of months ago, there was this big festival advertised by models where you could pay, I think, between $6,000 and $100,000 to go to this festival on this tropical island and see the best show ever with Blink-182 and other bands. And what happened was the island and the festival was wildly unprepared. Bands hadn't been paid. Employees hadn't been paid. And so people actually came to the island and the bathrooms weren't working. The food was like white bread, like wrapped in like a plate with plastic for some reason. There weren't accommodations. The whole thing was just a colossal blunder, and people literally had to be evacuated from the island like Vietnam. Some people were on helicopters. They literally had to have helicopters come in and evacuate these rich people from a summer festival. Well, Billy McFarland has been arrested for wire fraud, according to the FBI. They said McFarland allegedly presented fake documents to induce investors to pull over $1 million into his company and a fiasco called the Fyre Festival. Thanks to the investigative efforts of the FBI, McFarland will now have to answer for his crimes. He's out on $300,000 bail. A lot of people are saying, well, I'm glad rich people are getting this because this is decadent and emblematic of, I guess, what you would say, the let them eat cake mentality. So it's good to have people with so much money. It's good to see people that can spend $100,000 to see Blink-182 bite one once in a while. But also people are saying, well, they're glad this horrible scam artist, alleged horrible scam artist, is getting what's coming to him. And boys, can we just say, how dare this guy that has no idea how to put on a music festival have the audacity to put on a music festival? How dare he? How dare he?
yeah, I remember this blowing up. I think I first found out if it's on Twitter and seeing the pictures of just this desolate almost festival. And I don't know. It doesn't. Was this like a conspiracy just to swindle people out of money? Because if it was, it wasn't a. This was not a good way to do it. I mean, people.
Nah, I think it was.
I think there's a major. I think there's a major screw up. He stranded. Didn't he strand a lot of people on that island too? Well, like it was not. It was just like
people were stuck. They were stuck there for like 8 hours.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy. I guess this guy is getting what's coming. I don't know about the wire fraud part. Is it just because he sold people something that he couldn't produce? I'm not really familiar with that part.
They're saying that he wire fraud is a way to get people. It's one of numerous charges. Basically, he used bank transfer. They're saying he presented fake documents that convinced people to send him money through bank wire, the bank wire transfer process.
Do you think this will stick?
Yeah, I think he's going to get something. You know,
I mean, he'd probably get at least fined. I mean, did anyone get like hurt?
No one got hurt, just a bunch of rich. And that's another thing people say, oh, a bunch of rich people lost money, let's go after this guy. But how about all the poor people that Martin Shkreli almost killed or did kill? You know what I mean? Well, they're poor, so screw them. That's a sentiment a lot of people have too. You know?
Isn't wire fraud one of those crimes that even when you've usually committed something that's worse, like that's what they can nail you for? Sort of like how they like nailed Al Capone for like tax evasion or something like that.
Yeah, that's what this sounds like.
Well, it's also when you bootleg Pink Flag, you know. So
okay, that's a good record. I should listen to that more often.
That's an amazing record. Listen,
it is. I'm not quite sure about other wire stuff. Like there's like they keep going, like they're a band right now, right? Like they release albums all the time, and I'm never sure where to go with any of the new stuff because I feel like I missed like 25 years of history. So like, well, I'm like Pink Flag is great. And then every once in a while, like iTunes is like, there's a new wire record. And I'm like, I'm probably missing a few.
Well, the thing with Wire is there's three original records, and they're all different from each other, and none of the records sound like Pink Flag. The second two are kind of post-punkish, almost like Gang of Four, but not quite as snappy. And the new records, honestly, they all seem kind of people like, oh, Wire's so good. But it seems very bland to me, honestly. I don't know. Anyway, this is the Eradicator. This is one of Ricky's bands. I think it's a Ricky band. The Eradicator, they are streaming a new EP or a new LP. They're streaming a track from a new LP, and the track is called It's Your Right by The Eradicator. Ricky, what's happening with The Eradicator? What's cool about them?
Sort of a related to Direct Hit. I believe Nick Woods was or is involved with them. I think they share a bassist, I believe. I could be wrong. I've never seen them live. I believe our own Tom Trauma has, though, and I'm very jealous of him for it. this band put out a seven, not a seven inch, but a 10 inch. Was it 2015 or 2014? Still, it was really good. If you like Direct Hit, if you like the offshoot Direct Hit band Galactic Cannibal, you will like this. It's based on the Kids in the Hall sketch of the Eradicator. I believe I was not familiar with it originally. I had to look it up because I was too young when that originally came out. But yeah, this is good stuff. If you like mean and angry pop punk, you know, basically sort of the vocal opposite of like Mass Intruder, then you will like this band. Another great band from the Midwest too.
Speaking of Mass Intruder, Ricky, tell us about your hometown digs, VLHS.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So yeah, I believe it or not, I had been working on the, I'd been in touch with the guys at VLHS for about a week because I wanted to make sure we got this down perfectly. Because I wanted to do a good send off. VLHS stands for Vince Lombardi High School. It is the DI, it's like the big ish DIY all ages venue that down here in Southern California. It's out in Pomona, which is the fucking middle of nowhere, and it's an industrial park near like train tracks, and it was a pain in the ass to get to, at least for me. But they were anytime, but a lot of times great bands would play there. I saw Direct Hit for the very first time when they came out here for the first time to California. I saw them play there. That was their only like anywhere. That was the only place they were playing that was anywhere near Los Angeles. So I had to go. So they've announced that they announced, I believe, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that they are now closing. And if you listen to the podcast episode, the podcast is called Aaron, Ohio is for Lovers, that we provided in the article. You can get kind of a history of what went down there and why they're closing. I believe it's a new landlord that just, I guess there's some backdoor disagreements. I'm not really sure. But listen to that. I listened to that over a week ago. But so, you know, bands like Pears, Toys That, you know, Toy Guitar, Toys That Kill, Red City Radio, AJJ, Joyce Manor, The Bomb Pops, Direct Hit, Bad Cop, Casket, Horror Squad, and all of the smaller Los Angeles bands that you may listen to have probably played this venue. I've only got to go there three times. It's a really, really great. It was a really, really great little spot. And it's a shame it's closing. But interestingly, this probably would have happened once this podcast comes out, but the venue has announced the very last show, which is called the Vince Lombardi High School Class of 2017 graduation, which is happening July 8th. And they're having a ton of awesome bands play it. It's like Toys That Kill, Toy Guitar, a band called Chill Out, which is a mixture of Struck Out and Hillary Chilton, Horror Squad, which actually Tim, what's his last name? Burkert of is actually in that band. He owns VLHS too. And Dudes Night are having a reunion. Tilt Wheel and Casket are playing it. And if you can make it, that's going to be one hell of a show and one hell of a send off.
Being recorded by Bob Vielma of Shinobu.
Is that what's happening?
Yep. Let's go over to an Adam White band. Adam White, one of your main homies, Radioactivity, have released a new 7-inch, and it is out now and is streaming now, and that includes two songs. So one song is called Infected, and one card is called Sleep. Do you like this song, Adam White?
Oh my God, yeah. So Radioactivity is cool. It's good to hear anything new from them. Their last two records that came out were really good. They're both on Dirt Nap, and you should go own them because they're cool. So this is just an in-between release for them. So yeah, both Infected and Sleep put out on a 7-inch on Wild Honey. It's streaming on Punk News. You should go check it out. There is also a Radioactivity-related project that people have been talking about that you should also go listen to, which is called Lost Balloons. So this is... let's see, what is the actual thing here? It's Jeff Burke. So Jeff from Radioactivity, from the Marked Men. And Jeff, after the Marked Men broke up, he went to Japan for a number of years before he came back and started Radioactivity and some of the other stuff that he's been putting out. And one of the people that he had met and connected with over there as a person whose name was Yusuke Okada, and they're from a Japanese band called Suspicious Beasts. So Jeff and Yusuke have this band together called Lost Balloons. They have a record that's out called Hey Summer. It's way more on the poppy side of the kind of power pop stuff. Really kind of like there's some 60s-ish. It's very, very happy and sunshiny stuff, which is kind of interesting to hear from the guy that sings for the Markmen. So anyways, though, but that's out on Dirt Nap. You should go check it out, too. It is interesting as well. So yeah, you should go.
I will wrap. We'll wrap up. Let's talk about two quick hip-hop releases that came out recently, and I think they're both real good. Out of the Blue, Public Enemy has released a surprise album online for free. The album is called Nothing Is Quick in the Desert, and it's free right now, though it will not be free forever. And it's notable, Public Enemy claims to have released the first digital album ever in, like, 1997, and they might be right about that. Of course, well, Chuck D claims a lot, but he might be right about that. So it's interesting that this is coming around for Public Enemy's, I think, 30th anniversary. It follows Man Plans God Laughs from 2015, and I got to say, that album was not that good. This album is a little bit more old school. It's got Ice-T on it, and it is very good. Adam and Ricky, you guys check out this at all?
I did. Honestly, John, you know me and hip-hop. I'm taking a hard pass on both.
You gotta, Ricky. You gotta ease up on the hip hop, man. You gotta.
I just don't like. I'm not taking a. I'm not hitting on it. I mean, or bashing it. I just don't like hip hop. I don't know.
I used to not like country western, Ricky. And then there came a point. And actually, I used to like not like disco too. I like disco now too. And there came a point where I realized that there's no such thing as a bad genre. There's wonderful music within every genre, simply because every genre is so big. And so when you write off a genre entirely, I feel as though, at least I wasn't actually appreciating for what it was trying to get, and I wasn't hearing what it was trying to get, and I wasn't hearing what it was trying to do.
Wait. I don't think that's fair. If I were writing it off, I just wouldn't have listened to either. I tried both. This just didn't work for me. I'm saying, I
think you'll come around, Ricky, and when you do, I think you will.
You have more, John, what can I say? You have more mature taste than I do.
I wouldn't say that. I'm just fucking around. And listen, Ice Cube has also released a new track. It's called Good Cop, Bad Cop. It's a newly recorded track, but it's off the 25th anniversary version of Death Certificate, Ice Cube's iconic second album. Some people say his best album. Some people say his second best album. But everybody says it's either his first or second best.
Can you clear something up for me on this one?
Sure.
He's doing this, you know, and I know he started out doing the whole hard gangster rap thing from Compton. Is he still taken seriously in the hip hop community?
Most certainly, and
even,
I'll tell you why.
Even after doing like children's movies.
Absolutely, and I will tell you exactly why.
Okay.
Ice Cube's last couple albums have not been good. His last one, which was called Raw Footage, was that the last one? Raw Footage, or was it called In the West or whatever. Anyway, his last record was not good. And I'm a huge Ice Cube fan. Last two records have not been good. His one from 2007 or 2006, maybe 2005, Laugh Now, Cry Later, excellent record. His ones after that have not been good. So honestly, I was kind of writing Ice Cube off hip-hop-wise. He comes back with this track, Good Cop, Bad Cop. This track is unquestionably his best song in 20 years, maybe more. More than 20 years. His best song in like 23 years. This song is fantastic. Adam White, did you check out this song?
I have heard nothing, John. I'm just behind.
It's good.
It's on my list. It's
amazing because Ice Cube is a wealthy gentleman now, but it's Ice Cube being true to his political roots without trying to affect anything. You feel as though Ice Cube's not trying to say, oh, I'm still a guy in the streets. He's not saying that, but he is maintaining true to his ideological and political roots that we heard in the first four albums. And in a way, Run the Jewels is very much directly influenced by Ice Cube's first few albums. And so this is kind of Ice Cube being influenced by Run the Jewels, who were influenced by the first four Ice Cube albums. So it's kind of cool. Ricky, is Ice Cube taken seriously in the hip-hop community? The answer is absolutely yes. And okay. Here's why. Ice Cube is one of the foundation gangster rappers, him, Ice-T, PSY, PSK, what's that guy's name? Is it Easy Mo B? I can't remember his name. That guy's like the original gangster rapper. Some other people too. Ice Cube is probably one of the first five, if you will, gangster rappers. Scarface too. The important part about Ice Cube is he was never like, oh, I'm a drug dealer. I make lots of money selling drugs. It's great. And I make tons of money selling drugs. Ice Cube never gave that perspective. Neither did Ice-T. And actually, none of the original gangster rappers really did that. That's really more of a Puff Daddy kind of thing, which kind of the point of original gangster rap, if I may speak on behalf of original gangster rap, and I'm not an expert, is that it was, this is the situation that we're in. This is what we have to deal with. Isn't this unfortunate? How can we get out of it? Whereas guys with Puff Daddy through Rick Ross, it's more escapism. It's like, I'm super rich. I've got a yacht. I sell, you know, tons of cocaine. I'm super rich. That's more Rick Ross. You don't hear that with Ice-T. To the contrary, you don't hear that with Ice Cube. You hear, I'm a broke guy. The system is stacked against me. I'm doing what I can to make a little bit of money, and I'm still in poverty. That's what you hear. KRS-One, too. Actually, KRS-One had one of the original gangster rap tracks with 9mm goes bang. The question is Ice Cube taken seriously? The answer is unquestionably yes. Because as Ice Cube explained, the point of gangster rap is not, I'm a drug dealer, selling drugs is great, I'm going to get rich selling drugs. That is not original gangster rap, and I don't think any of the original gangster rappers would say that's the main point. The point of gangster rap is to say, I'm in a situation that I'm not happy about, that I feel is unfair. I'm going to do what I can to get out of that situation and thrive. And that is precisely what Ice Cube did. Ice Cube basically wrote the most important lyrics for NWA, got some notoriety, didn't get a lot of money from NWA, quit NWA, started his own thing, the Ice Cube Solo, made a fair amount of money doing Ice Cube Solo, took that money, built his own movie production companies, owns the movie he puts out, and makes money off the movies he puts out that he puts together. Friday. Are We There Yet? I'm not saying are we there. Fridays are funny movies. Are We There Yet is not a funny movie, but Ice Cube owns that, and he owns lots of other stuff too. The point being is Ice Cube is a man that built himself up from practically nothing and basically is not chained or is not bound to any company or anything like that, because if Jay-Z wants to put out an album, Jay-Z has to, you know, get his label's permission. Whereas Ice Cube, if he wants to put out a movie, he'll use his own money to make the movie and make money off that movie. If he wants to put out an album, he will record that album on his own label and put it out. And that's what gangster rap is all about, at least from my perspective. And I'm not an expert. The point Ice Cube has built his own freedom despite the circumstance upon which he was born.
And here's where I can come in. I can definitely commend him for doing what you've said he's done. That's cool. The music's just not for me. But good on him for being entrepreneurial and being successful at the same time. I think that's great.
Ricky, man, I feel like you got to get into some hip hop, Ricky. I feel like you got to get into some hip hop.
You know, here's the thing. You know, I was always, you know, the closest I came, I've said this before, but it was like Rage Against the Machine. And also,
yes, you love Rage Against the Machine, but you don't like hip hop. I can't fathom that.
I was about to say, I've always, you know, I really liked that other, what was it? Street Sweeper Social Club. I thought it was great. The Boots Riley, Tom Morello thing.
Yeah, so I don't know why you don't like hip hop.
I don't know. I think I need, it might just be because I just need guitars in there. I don't know.
I think you need to get out of that mindset, Ricky.
I'm going to mercifully, for the sake of our readers, press the button that is going to go, John is lecturing Ricky about hip hop. So now, I didn't want us to talk more about the fact that Ricky doesn't like hip hop than we did the Dickies. So, all right.
All right.
Where are we going with this now? What do we do? Let's play one more song and then get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to play a song. Let me think. What do I want to play? Have I played an Integrity track lately? Maybe I'll play some obscure punk. Let me play some obscure punk band that I was listening to. I'm going to play, I'll play a track by, I know what I'm going to play. I'm going to play a Mischief Brew track. I love Mischief Brew. This is apropos of nothing. Mischief Brew is a great band, one of my favorite bands ever. This is one of my favorite Mischief Brew tracks. This is Mischief Brew doing Paris Warlike.
It says here, Army marches free. meeting today. All on the eve of Mayday, I found a paper in the antique. Paris warlike on Mayday. This gasoline has met its match. Rising will be smashed. The stirring guns and loaded tanks. So who shall cast the first red flag on yellow paper? Black pipe. Troops are ready to smash a general strike. Up in the attic under dust, I opened up a soldier's trunk. And now the ghosts inside are all stirred up. Hear those trumpets blare. They're all in fire in the square. They're standing on some general's bones. And that's all the AP wrote. I guess the people are with their sleep. I wonder what did May 1st deadline read. All on the paper in the antique. Paris warlike on May.
And we are back, and that was Mischief Brew doing Paris Warlike off the Stone Operation. Check out their records at Fistolo.com. Lots of great music. Adam White, Tricky Ricky, any closing words? Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap up this semi-long episode of the podcast? We used to do 65-minute podcasts. Now we can't get out the door under 80 minutes.
People don't have anything to do.
I'm just really happy this whole Newsweek is over. This was when the whole Dickies thing broke out, that was more stressful than it needed to be.
Yeah, are you surprised that this had such legs to it? I thought this would be gone in 4 hours. I was really surprised that this was such a big issue.
No, when these types of arguments among a lot of people happen, they start to spread, and then they need a few days to die out, and I think we're at the tail end of it now.
And were you surprised by how big of an issue it was?
I'm shocked how big of an issue it was. I guess I'm not, considering that.
No,
it was a good thing for everyone to sit down and fight over. It was one of those things where no one got hurt, everyone could have an opinion on it. So, you know what? Let's just dig in and go at each other for a while. And I think that was a little bit of what was happening there. What I'm really happy about is how there was a giant punk controversy and it had nothing to do with me. Zero. I sat the whole thing out until right now, and it was great. So woo. Cool with that. We should probably tell people podcast@thepunknews.org is how you should send us emails about this thing. I will put out a little caveat if you're still listening to the show at this point. We probably have an upper limit of how many emails about this specific issue that we're going to be able to read on air without making the podcast about this issue forever. So just saying. If you want one, get it in early because we're not.
Adam, you're trying to censor people. You're a fascist, Adam.
I know. I'm just bored, John. I'm so bored.
We'll see you next week.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.